My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Hello, welcome to Cookie Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cookie Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday, whenever, from whenever to whenever. I'm at my... Oh, by the way, just so you guys know, a little bit behind the curtain, Wizard of Oz style here, we forgot to clap beforehand, so we can't actually sync this up. So this is how we do it. Dave. See?
Very good.
Yeah. We have... when each person talks, maybe they can clap in. It'd be awesome. We got Matt up there in Rhode Island. How you doing?
Very good. I will do that because I'm recording.
Yeah, we got John, customer service representative extraordinaire. He's more than a customer service representative, I have to say. He's in Lyme, Connecticut, where I was recently. How you doing, John?
Not too bad, thanks. Hello, everybody.
Are you? Nice. And Nastasia from her undisclosed hidey hole somewhere in Southern California. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, you gonna clap or you're not recording? Whoa. What was that? You just punching the mic?
Because I'm holding the mic.
Oh.
Very nice.
Oh, you're doing this like stage style?
Yeah.
Are you headbanging?
No.
Usually when I hold the mic, I like to like bang the head with it right now. You know what I'm saying? No?
No.
You're not a headbanging mic sort of a person?
No.
More of a stage crooner?
Yes. Mm. I have a glass of scotch with me too.
Oh yeah. So when you think of stage crooner, you think of like the whole kind of Dean Martin drinking while you singing kind of a thing.
Oh yeah, you can hear like the ice sort of hitting the walls when
Yeah, it's rough on the pipes. You know what I'm saying? Like drinking. Like for those of you that don't know, Nastasia Lopez and I, along with my brother-in-law Travis Huggett, years ago flew to Modesto, California. Right. I wish it was Bakersfield. We almost got to go to the Bakersfield concert, which would have been sick because that's where the Bakersfield sound is from, Bakersfield. We flew to Modesto. You actually can't fly to Modesto, right, Stas? We had to drive there from San Francisco?
Yeah.
And to get Merle Haggard back when he was alive, it would have been a different thing if he was already dead, to Skull, where we had this project where we were like getting all of these people, some, you know, mostly chefs, and bartenders, but like some non-chefs and bartenders, to do this thing where you have your shot of aquavit, you look at the camera, which is supposed to be the other person that you're drinking with, you down it all, and then you look back at the camera again. You have to, and the whole thing is that it's the before and after, the before stare versus the after stare. How does it look like? And we went to do Merle Haggard, and we got him before the concert, and he's like, I don't drink before concerts anymore because it's bad for the pipes. Remember that?
Yeah,
bad for the pipes. Yeah. But anyway, that was fun. And in that photo shoot we did with Merle Haggard, Travis, just as he normally does, because one of the reasons Travis was so good at this is Travis is very good at like just taking with whatever light is available, like a found light kind of a situation, and like dealing with kind of uncontrolled situations. That's why he shot my book Liquid Intelligence, because I knew that someone who was going to work with me would have to deal with uncontrolled situations, as they say. And so he just was like, you know, shooting during the time we were talking to Merle, and one of the shots he took there happened to be Merle's next album cover, which I thought was pretty cool. I wonder whether that was his last album, or whether he came out with another album afterwards. I don't know. I'll have to look it up. All right. So what did you guys cook over the holidays? Anything? What do you guys have? All of you guys are Christmas folk, right? You're all Christmas folk?
Yep.
All right. So what do you guys have for the Christmas dinner?
I did some Japanese Wagyu, Yorkshire pudding, roasted carrots, sautéed mushrooms. I think that was it. No, we had like the bûche de Noël for dinner, or for dessert.
Oh, wait, say that with the Frenchy accent again.
Bûche de Noël.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, John, are you going to forget your accent and forget your English and go French?
I wasn't going to bring this up because I didn't think Nastasia wanted me to, but Nastasia
personal.
Nastasia is incensed.
Incensed.
over the whole Hilaria Baldwin situation that's going on right now. I'm not going to explain it all to you guys because that's why Google was invented. Yeah. But
are you incensed, Matt?
No, I'm not. I mean, I'm only vaguely aware. But can you tell me, like, why should I be? Pitch me on incensed. Why should I be incensed?
She's been faking a Spanish accent and being born in Spain and pretending not to know English words for over 10 years. And she, even though it just came out that she was born and raised in Boston, went to Spain on holiday sometimes with her parents. Her parents retired to Mallorca. They did not live there full time like she said they did. And when she was young, and she went to NYU. So
it's amazing. It's like so bold because this is all so happening in the age of the internet too. So isn't this like a foreseeable thing that maybe somebody would turn around and be like, didn't I go to middle school with that person?
Yeah. Okay, so I have the opinion of who gives a crap, but the thing is that, so I was saying to Nastasia and John, I haven't spoken to you about this, that you and Hilaria are basically the exact same person, only you haven't faked it, right? You have a similar profile in that you could all of a sudden start going by Jean and then also busting out like the hardcore, like, you know, accent, like Belgique accent, you know what I'm saying? And like, you could do that. And then I was like, would Nastasia get as pretzeled up over?
That would be so weird. Well, I think the thing that bothers me is that she pretended not, like, when it's convenient to not know certain cultural things, like, you know, Alec, I guess, is into a lot of opera and stuff like that, or books or TV shows. She said she didn't grow up with a TV in Spain.
Well, how does the opera like shuffle with that? So you say opera is separate. Opera is not part of the Hilaria discussion, right? Because that's all European. I mean, no offense to, you know, Philip Glass and his so-called
operas. No. I mean, she feigned not to know much about like opera because it wasn't.
Yeah, but that's not an American thing.
Anyway, well, he was the commentator for the Met.
I like how now she's pretending to not know opera. Clearly she knows opera. She went to NYU. Clearly she knows opera.
So, but do we believe that she has lied to Alec Baldwin?
We don't know. We don't know. There are people that have a theory in my close circles that when she met him, she was like, oh, crap, I need to be interesting. I can't just be Hillary from Boston. And, you know, I need to, like, keep this guy's interest. So she created a thing. And he loved the fact that she had this accent and was, like, you know, very Spanish and danced with the whatever it's called. So
now I see the route in for Jean's transformation. Yeah, yeah. So he'll be John, on a first date, it'll be really, he's like, I'm really excited about this one, guys. Yeah. I got a good feeling, and all of a sudden just straight Belgian.
So John, give me some how you say pommes frites in English. Give me some
pommes frites en anglais. What?
You have to go full fake accent on me.
Oh,
you have
man.
To speak all in English except for you've forgotten how to say French fries.
Exactly.
Give me some.
That's how I used to drink underage. I would scan a photocopy of my passport and then like Microsoft Paint move some numbers around. And then I'd walk around, you know, just photocopy of a 21-year-old passport and I'd put on the fake French accent and everything.
Oh,
and
my God.
It worked most of the time. It was pretty impressive.
So give me Nastasia. Some, I would like a beer. Give me some, I would like a beer, how you say French fries.
I would like beer, and how would you say French fries?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I would definitely give you a drink. Nastasia, now how incensed are you currently about John's sins?
Not incensed at all. I think it's...
About John, no. About how...
No.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I mean, you're saying...
Just checking.
The big thing about Hillary...
Oh, by the way, Nastasia's never going to get mad at someone for scamming for a beer.
No. Scamming for a husband.
It's not even that. First of all, like, correct me if I'm wrong, Nastasia, or if I'm speaking out of turn, we can bleep it out of the whole show. It's up to you. But it's not that Nastasia has her eyes on Alec Baldwin. That would be ridiculous. But she considers him prime material and is upset that he has been scammed this way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
True?
Scammed out of a good one.
But what's the overarching thing? Yeah.
If it had come out that, like, Hilaria had, you know, that she was Countess Bathory and was drinking children's blood to stay young, that would be fine by Nastasia. the fact of the matter is that because of Alec Baldwin, she is constantly, quote unquote, forced to go to Saturday Night Live tapings and their after parties. And is so over it. Is so sick of going to Saturday Night Live. And this is why Nastassia hates her.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
She sleeps backstage while he does his Trump thing and then makes him leave as soon as he's done with the cold open.
Ah, yeah. We've gotten to the meat of the issue here.
Yeah, true story. And that's where the hatred comes from. So, you know, is she going to get mad at, you know, John going by Jean and not remembering how to say le French fries or whatever? No, that's all fine. That's all good, you know? Anyways, all right. So John's like, All right, so let me ask you a question, John. Back to cooking for a minute. So, so I'm a big fan of Yorkshire pudding. How'd it come out? Did it puff up or was it sunken and sad?
It was very puffed up. My mom makes it every year, and it was, it was good.
All right, beautiful. So for those of you that aren't in the know, who aren't like a roast beef kind of a situation person, a Yorkshire pudding is basically a large popover slash Dutch baby slash whatever. It's a thin batter that puffs up and gets airy in the middle, heavy on eggs and a fat. And in Yorkshire pudding, the fat is the drippings from the roast beef that you just cooked. And while the roast beef is resting, you pour in the batter into the roasting pan and throw it in. Although a Yorkshire pudding made in a popover pan with drippings is a good idea because it's easier to cut and serve out. However, so that is what it is. So how does your mom do it every year?
I actually don't know. I haven't asked the recipe. We don't do the beef fat. Well, we didn't this year.
Well, because you cooked Wagyu, and who has enough Wagyu fat?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's where I was getting with my questions. Is that traditionally you would make this with the fat from the roast, but I'm guessing you didn't have that this year because to cook the Wagyu so hard that you have the fat from the roast would cause you to be the lowest of quality individuals.
Agreed. Yes.
Yeah. So what was the form factor of this Yorkshire pudding?
She does like a 9x13 glass
pan. I'm familiar. The Pyrex casserole pan.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I have several such casserole pans, even though my family, not a fan of the casserole.
Okay. That's too bad.
That's when we had Joey Scladani on. I was like, yo, tuna casserole. He's like, yes. But tuna casserole is widely hated. Widely hated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I don't think any of the other people here like. What Nastassia and Matt, what are your thoughts on the tuna casserole?
I haven't had it in a very long time. I don't
mentally
know.
Though.
I don't think I'd have
positive associations with a tuna casserole.
What, here's my issue. Why not?
Hot tuna.
Yeah.
Great conjunction of words. Wasn't that a band or an album?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a better band name than it was band, in my opinion.
Yeah. Band name, fantastic. Hot tuna. But, okay, so if you don't like hot tuna, what about tuna melts? Also, you don't like tuna melts?
No, not really.
Okay, how about this? It's served cold, tuna mac. I think tuna mac's a fantastic thing.
I like tuna mac, but I don't. Yeah. The tuna does not get hot when I do that.
No, as I'm saying, if you guys are anti-hot tuna the band and anti-hot tuna the food stuff, maybe I can get you guys on board with tuna mac, but I think a lot of people also don't like the tuna mac, whereas to me, I'm like, I like tuna salad, I like pasta salad, although I'm sure Nastassia does not like pasta salad because of how abused it gets. I'm not sure. I haven't discussed this with her, but then if you like either of those two things, the conjunction of them sounds like a good idea, and by the way, is.
Tuna, many an episode of Cooking Issues has been brought to you by Tuna Mac because it's the thing that I make in like 30 minutes right before, you know, getting on here. Like a quick, crappy tuna.
Where do you have your cold macaroni?
This is like hot. This is hot macaroni. I mean, well, you know, it's approaching hot macaroni. And I don't know. It's not the whole dish is not cold. It's a whole like... mixed bag. This is not restaurant food. This is like, I have 15 minutes to do this before the show. Go.
And are you doing it with instant ramen? Is that how fast you have to be?
No, but like mac and cheese, like Annie's mac and cheese or whatever.
With the cheese pack?
Yeah, dude.
So this is basically tuna casserole. You're saying you're doing you're doing tuna mac, but in fact you're making tuna casserole.
Oh, is that what tuna casserole is? I guess I don't know what tuna casserole is then.
Yeah, that's, well, it's usually soupier, right? So like it's soupier than mac and cheese, but you're doing an exact halfway and you're serving it luke temperature, so because it's not hot. You don't want it to be hot, so you're folding the tuna in to cool it off at the end, letting it cool for 5 seconds and then eating it.
And then shoving it in my face while I set up this call. Yeah.
Yep. Oh God.
So okay. So I do. So I do love tuna casserole.
Yeah.
What
brand
of the show?
What brand of mac and cheese do you go for?
To the Annie's.
You just said Annie's.
Oh, Annie's. Yeah. I'm not like Booker likes the Annie's. Not a fan. Too thin. How do you thicken up that sauce? Too thin. I guess the tuna.
The tuna helps there. I mean, I throw a bunch of random stuff in. I throw extra cheese in too if I've got something.
So you're an Annie's Mac doctor in the way that whatever her name was, Sarah Lee. What was her name that used to be married to Cuomo, Nastasia?
Sandra Lee.
Like her big thing was doctoring cake mixes. Maybe you have a cookbook in your future, Matt, like the Annie's Mac doctor.
I think I'll let someone else. Cooking Issues listeners, you can have that one for free.
Now, here's another one, like on mac and cheese while we're on it. Like, how many of you guys like sad, thin mac and cheese? I probably shouldn't have called it sad because that means that I think it's bad. But I don't like a thin sauced mac and cheese. I prefer more substance. You guys?
I don't like too much substance.
You're a medium substance sort of a fellow?
Yeah.
I get sad when I am rushing things and accidentally thin it out more than I want, for sure. Mm.
Nastasia, what are your mac and cheese opinions? Didn't you do a great... Nastasia was the queen of mac and cheese. What do you like? Nastasia had the best fast mac and cheese when she was doing Pasta Flyer.
True.
Her mac and cheese recipe was like next level mac and cheese and fast as fudge. So
yes,
fast.
Like 4 minutes, I think.
But I don't remember the consistency that you did. What was? She's not going to tell you the secret, dude. She's not like me.
she might.
No.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Consistency was silky and well covered across all pasta pieces.
Spoken like, first of all, have you and Booker been talking to each other? Because whenever you know Booker's favorite like high quality indicator is silky, yep. Usually reserved for fish. But I like that you've moved it over to the pasta thing, silky. Silky. We've spoken on the air since I made the locks for him, right? Yeah. All right. Well, won't get into that. All right. So look, should we rip through some questions here? Let's rip through some questions. Now listen. There's been a lot of talk in our chat room, right, John, about this kind of aseptic ASAP cooking technology that's coming out of, I guess, either Australia or China or whatever it is on, like, you know, advanced like sous vide aseptic packaging.
Yeah.
But there's no real question here involved, right?
No, like, it's yeah, just like just more for, I don't know if you wanted to share that with everyone. It's just something that was said and I thought it would be of interest to you.
Yeah, it's just long. I don't know that, you know.
Yeah.
Right. You should not read the full thing. I just sent it to you in case you were interested because it was a very lively discussion going on in the chat.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, look, in general, my issue when something new comes out is that the less people tell you, and apparently the owner of the company came out to talk to one of the chat people, and because I talked to them on the side to explain exactly kind of what the processing is. But okay, check this out. I was once in a think tank situation with a large manufacturer of equipment, and this was before we had the Searsol and all that stuff, which, you know, at the end Nastasia can wind me up like one of those. I'm more of a cymbal monkey, right, Nastasia?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. She can wind me up and I'll ching 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 at the end. You know, I gotta go get my little cymbal monkey hat, and you know, my ears actually are pretty big. I could probably just fluff them out a little bit and go full cymbal monkey at the end on what's going on with Amazon, because people are asking for Searsols and whatnot. So we'll get into that maybe at the end. So I'm in this meeting with these people. One of the people who was brought to the think tank was a product developer for a very large, he was a brand actually developer. So his job was he would go out to people's homes, like potential customers' homes, and just sit in their home all day and ask them questions that they didn't understand, and then relate that to food technology and what they were going to sell them the next year vis-a-vis soup. So he would like sit, he didn't work for Campbell's, by the way, I can't tell you who he worked for, but he would like, he would go to someone's house, like with his, you know, like I am a researcher outfit on, and just sit there and talk to randos all day without really asking them specific questions like, hey, what kind of soup you folks like? He would never ask that, right? And he told me, this was years ago, that there was a revolutionary new technology for soup that was going to completely change the entire soup category and make things taste fresh and not canned, and that pasta was no longer going to be a pile of mush, and that like potatoes weren't going to be overcooked, and blah, 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 blah. I was like, can you tell me how it works? And he couldn't, and guess what happened? Nothing. Soup has not been revolutionized. It didn't work. If people can't tell you how exactly they're going to revolutionize something, or they can't like disclose it because they can't get a patent, or they can't do whatever, or they can't protect it, then odds are, if they can't tell you about it, unless they say, I'm going to tell you about it at this date when this happens, right? Odds are it's not real. Wouldn't you say that's true, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems reasonable.
Like, for instance, if someone says, I'm going to give you my taxes, and they don't for like 6 years. I'm just kidding. I'm not talking about that. I'm not supposed to. No politics. No politics.
You did this.
No politics.
We can go into it if you want.
I didn't say nope. I didn't say nope.
Happy to.
Connor wrote in from Instagram, and ciao, I have a cooking issue. I'm a bartender. I was working with Monin Puree today. They're Monin's yuzu. I've never seen Monin Purees. I just see their syrups. You guys ever seen the purees?
I'm not, no.
No. It sits in at around 70% sugar. That's intense. And contains pectin. That's intensely sugary for a puree. Obviously, it's very gloopy, almost jam-like, and so it's hard to work with in a drink without shaking with the other ingredients. My workaround, my mama told me you better work around. Did she also tell you that, Nastasia?
She told me I have to shop around.
Oh, really? How did that work out?
you know.
Yeah. My workaround was a whip shake to emulsify without adding too much dilution to the drink. But this has gotten me thinking, what could I do with a product that has a high sugar content and contains pectin to make it more workable in a cocktail without adding water into the situation? A few online resources suggest that pectin can lose its gel-making abilities after being exposed to high temperature. That's not ever been my experience. In fact, what do you do to jelly to make it set? Anyone? Anyone? Fridge? You boil it, and then you chill it to set it, right? I mean, you don't just blend fruit with sugar and it becomes jelly. Jelly! That's, by the way, from, that's Rudolph. Who wants a water gun that shoots jelly?
That's not Rudolph.
That's Rudolph.
That's not the character.
No, it's the Land of Misfit Toys. It's the water gun that shoots jelly.
Okay, yeah.
He's friends with that little doll that no one knows why no one wants her. Have you ever figured out why no one wants her? Jen had a theory.
Because it cried, I think.
But lots of dolls cry and people want them. That's like one of the main things dolls do is that they... Right? No one wants to play with a Peter in the box. We know that. No child wants to play with a Charlie in the box. That one, he's basically like King Moonracer's second in command. You have like the cowboy that rides the ostrich... Right? But what's wrong with the
train with square wheels?
Train with square wheels. Although, I think it's just the tender car that has square wheels, right? Doesn't the train itself have round wheels? The engine itself? Maybe they could just lose the tender car. You know what I mean?
Let me find the dolls issue. Go ahead with the.
Yeah, if you figure out the dolls issue, and what does he say again when they think that Santa's not coming? And is he like. Because now I have my movies confused. Now I have Charlie in the Box saying skunked again. Anyway. By the way.
So it says the reason for Dolly being there was never explained.
So we have to make it up what's wrong with her?
Leaving many watchers wondering why she was a misfit due to her normal looking appearance.
So she's just there to make all little girls feel bad about themselves. Be like, what's wrong is on the inside. It doesn't even have to be visible, and there's still something wrong with you, right? That's what it's there for?
Oh my God.
It's so hardcore.
You can write a thesis on that.
But you know, first let me write the book, and then you and I together we can write our. Well, okay, so the question is, did Nastasia and I write our own separate? What's plural of thesis?
Thesi.
Oh, come on, John, you're the ex professor here. What is it? Is there a plural of thesis?
Theses. That can't be right. Let's see.
We will each write a thesis. The choices are we each write a thesis on, or I should say, an exegesis of the story of Rudolph, right? And then we publish them in its own, like on their own in a chapter book format, or we could try to combine our thoughts and write a single thesis. What are the feelings?
I think that you and I should someday write a book on all of like the crazy things that we've done that people don't know about, like the eating the fruit at the place in California, and then I'll explain the lunch like that.
We never talked about that?
We have.
But on the air, we've never talked about the bathroom aftermath?
No. No.
Really?
And like the Peter walking in on you, like all of
we talked about that a million times.
All of the things that we don't talk about, we should talk about. We should write in this book. All the things that we talk about when we're out with people and they're horrified, we should write in this book.
That's all the things we ever talk about.
Yes.
Like the fact of the matter is that like I honestly don't understand, like, unless you're eating, like, why are any subjects really off limits when you're just having a conversation, right? Like, what are you supposed to talk about? The stuff that you always talk about? Am I supposed to sit with you and we'll be like, oh, how about the Mets? Oh, the eggs, the price went up and then it went back down again. I mean, what are you supposed to talk about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. All right, we're back on the Monin. My work, now remember people, what we were talking about, maybe I should start doing this in the future. What we were talking about was Connor has a yuzu puree and it's too thick to mix in and was having problems with the pectin. Then Connor said, you know, that it's jelly-like and that we talked about boiling, and that's what sent us into the tangent on Rudolph, which is how we got here. That's a short recap of the last like 5 minutes.
This is incredibly helpful for me. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So anyway, so Connor thinks that making a pectin lose its gel by overheating seems counterintuitive. Now, what they probably mean that pectin can lose its strength if it's heated too long is that pectin is interesting among hydrocolloids in that it requires a certain amount of acid to set properly, right? Especially native pectin in fruits. However, in acidic conditions, when you boil them too long, the acid actually can break apart a polysaccharide, right? Since pectin's a polysaccharide, it can hydrolyze the polysaccharide, thereby destroying its gelling ability. Because one of the things that, aside from the variety that a hydrocolloid is, the actual chain length of the polymer, which can be different. So, like two different pectins can have two different chain lengths, right? And two different gelatins can have two different chain lengths, even though that's not a saccharide, that's a polypeptide. And the shorter the chain length, the less something has gelling ability. So if you boil it for a long time in the presence of a lot of acid, then the acid will start to hydrolyze, break apart the pectin, and it will lose its gelling ability. That's probably what they're talking about, but you'd have to cook it a good long time. Anyways. What I would do if I were you is I would just buy some enzyme, some pectinase enzyme, and hit it and see whether or not it might be a little too high in sugar for it to work, and it might be a little too high in acid, but you'll probably get some pectolytic activity in there, and that will thin it out. Another thing that we like to do with ingredients that are unhelpful is to like say, okay, listen, I know that I'm going to put a drink on the menu with this yuzu puree, and it also contains this other liquid that doesn't cost a lot, and then I don't care that I'm like putting it only with the yuzu, and then pre-dilute it a little bit. Now your shelf life is going to go down significantly, but your pourability is going to go way up. And so, you know, that's what we would do a lot of times. A third scenario that you can do in terms of making it work in a drink that's going to be shaken is you can buy dosing pumps. So speaking of Monin, who made your puree, at the bar we would have milk syrup and cream syrup, and those things are very hard to jigger. They don't mix very well. And so what we would do is we would put them into dosimetric pumps and dose them directly into the shaker, and it made our life easy. Is that a good enough answer there, Anastasia, or no?
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
From Max. My name is Maxim. I'm from Kazakhstan. Man, I really want to go there. Like,
you
that
always
is...
say that you should just go.
When? First of all, like, I almost thought I was going to get to go once, right? But like, when, how am I going to just go to Kazakhstan?
Why? When the pandemic is over, why don't you and Jen take a vacation to Kazakhstan instead of waiting for someone to pay for a trip for you for free?
You know what? Or I need a business reason to go. Here's another thing.
Why?
You know what? What?
Why do you need a business reason?
What do you mean, why do I need a business? I don't take vacations just randomly. We do like one a year. I don't think that I'd be like, Jen, where are we going to go? She'd be like, Kazakhstan.
That would be awesome.
I want to go. But I have to also go at the right time of year and get a guide to take me up into the mountains, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder whether that guy we met forget it. Anyway, I learned about you from a book by Adam Rogers, who wrote a book. What was his book called? Proof, I think. He wrote a book about bar mixology. You were described as the best in the business. Very kind. Can you give advice or literature to young bartenders? So if you're going to buy books, I mean, there are not that many books on kind of the style that I wrote about, right? So I mean, obviously, you get my book. That would help me. If you want, like, also some modern takes on things, Morgenthaler's books. And then just get some of the classics. Like, you know, get, you know, Meehan's book. Get Gary Regan's book. Actually, I have a bibliography in at the end of my book that books that I think are good for people to read when they're starting, and then just go to a lot of bars. That's always the answer. If you're interested in learning how to cook or learn how to make drinks, the first thing to do is to go have the food and the drinks of people who are doing very interesting things, because it's impossible, not impossible, but it's very hard to come up, like, it's very hard to create an internal metric of what's possible using only just your own skill, because you're limited by yourself, right? So, you know, I always thought it was funny, and I think we've talked about this before, but I've always thought it was funny, like it's American famous pizza places, old school ones, and they don't ever eat anyone else's pizza. Why would I eat someone else's pizza? Their pizza sucks. My pizza's the best. Or like burger places where they're like, I've never had the other person's burger. Why would I have that? Their burger sucks. Mine's the best, right? And that works for a very specific kind of category where everyone says they like your stuff, so you feel like you don't need to change. But, you know, New Yorkers who think that way about pizza have been completely lapped, right, by pizza knowledge. I mean, pizza is one of those things where growing up in the 70s and 80s, pizza sucked. Let's just be honest. Pizza sucked. Like, New York pizza was still better than pizza you could get elsewhere, but compared to a modern person's idea of pizza, it sucked, right? And people who are still thinking of pizza in terms of what was great pizza in the 80s, right? Like, I'm not trying to insult them, but like Sally's and Pepe's in New Haven, they make a delicious pizza, right? But they've been lapped mentally, right? They should continue to do their thing. I'm not saying they should ever change. But to say that they're the be and all, the end all, because they don't go around and taste other people's pizza, right? Specifically. So I think what you need to do to make yourself better is to go and just eat and drink a lot. That's always the answer, because every time that I've thought I've known something and then have gone on taste excursions to taste other people's stuff, I've realized I don't know nearly as much as I think I did. And that's the best way to learn. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's good, dude. It's like that guy in Japan.
Yeah, right. Yeah, bartender who's like, came to the United States, was invited to the United States. I won't call him out, right? And famous. And doesn't drink very much, which is fair, but like was taken around all to cocktail bars here in the States, not even interested in seeing what people were doing. You know what I mean? Not interested. I guess he thought maybe it would pollute his mentality of what's going on. But I think, like, you know, the older you get, right? Now I'm 49, pretty soon I'm going to be 50. I think we might have to, because of the pandemic, Nastassia, let's postpone, like, our deadlines for happiness 1 year. Are you accepting this or not? We have to do it on air.
When was it supposed to be?
It's supposed to be this year. It's supposed to be, well, not this year. It's supposed to be 20, it's supposed to be 2021. Oh. We were pegging it on my 50th birthday,
right,
that we were going to get in stable, happy situations. But you want to push it a year? Do you want to just publicly go on record saying we're pushing it a year?
Can we push it 6 months instead?
Pandemic's been going more than 6 months, and our business has been pushed more than 6 months back.
Yes, so I'm only willing to go 6 months.
What?
6 months from your 50th. So like,
no, but that's not even this year. It has to be on my 50th. So it had to be 6 months from
your
50th. My 50th is in March.
Yes.
I'm 50 years old in March.
So November 2020, right? 6 months.
There's no way. Like, even if we're lucky, even if we're lucky, we'll just be getting our new product online then.
I have faith.
Well, that is heartening, because usually you do not. I am very heartened by this. I'm not even being sarcastic. That's truly heartening, especially in light of what's happening to our business right now.
you want to get into that now, since you brought it up, and just get it over with?
No.
Come on.
I'll spool off. Like you tell me
quickly,
when.
Quickly. I'm going to give you a time limit.
No.
Can I ask a stupid question that's probably maybe inflammatory?
There are no stupid questions, just stupid people. Remember that.
Why is Amazon the only place that you can get a Series
Oy.
He really liked it.
Because we could sell it on our own, but the Amazon has amazing distribution for all their faults. And the biggest problem of doing something yourself is the logistics of distribution and shipping.
But are we doing that CNN thing, Nastassia, or not?
Rebecca's on it.
Oh shit! She's gonna
what?
She's gonna be
family show.
Dave's a guest though. So
I said what?
Oh my god! You Freudian said the S.
You definitely.
I did not curse.
There was a slip there.
You definitely did.
We'll review the tapes.
My mind did not curse. My mouth. Maybe did, but I don't even honestly.
Thank God she said she doesn't listen to the show, so that's, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, but like the true feelings.
No, here's the thing. This is not has to do with Rebecca. This has to do with any person I've ever dealt with whose job it is to protect a brand, right? Their job is to protect a brand. So they are inherently worried when someone goes out and there's a potential to damage the brand by, for instance, talking crap about Amazon on something that someone from Amazon might watch, like CNN, right? And so like when the PR person at the French Culinary Institute at the time, when the Department of Health was cracking down on sous vide packaging in New York City, like I had just written the curriculum for sous vide cooking at the French Culinary Institute. You know, I was 30 something. I was raring to go. I was like, you know, let's do this. I was like, I pitched. I was like, listen, we have an opportunity here at the French Culinary Institute. And at the time, no one was teaching low temperature sous vide cooking. No one understood it. No one understood the rules. I had just, like, I had been working a lot with Wiley, who was, you know, one of the foremost people using sous vide at WD-50 at the time. And like, I had done all of the research. I knew more on the technical aspects of it than anyone, right, at the time, from a cook's perspective, not from a science and process perspective, but from a cooking perspective. And I was like, listen, we can be the people who are the face of this. We can be the place where everyone goes for information. Like, this is our chance. Like, we can get everyone. We can be the people. We can be the voice. And the ability to be that voice doesn't come up very often in anything, right? And the PR person at the time was like, it's not an important part enough of our brand and it's too risky. So no, you have to shut up. And I couldn't talk to the NY Times about it. I couldn't talk to anyone. They didn't even really allow me to talk to chefs anymore. And I had been on the phone almost constantly, like 8 hours a day, talking to chefs, calling, asking me questions about what was going to happen, because I could talk, because we didn't use sous vide in the restaurant downstairs at the French Culinary. Because we didn't use it, I was thoroughly free to talk to the Board of Health, because the Department of Health, because it didn't matter. Like I could ask them questions and they wouldn't be like, why are you doing that? And then come and inspect us, because we weren't doing it. You know what I mean? We legitimately weren't. And so like I was in this very, very privileged position and they said no. And maybe it was a good PR reason, maybe it wasn't. And like time and time again, like when we were at Momofuku, when we were associated more with Momofuku, like the PR like is in the job of not taking big risks like that. And for, you know, me, especially when you're younger, your job is to take risks. So that's why that reaction. Does that make sense, Nastasia, or no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, you know.
But anyway, Amazon is screwing us hard.
Oh yeah, real hard. Real hard. Real hard. So I mean, it's honestly, I don't know why we should have done it at the end. It's too long to get into, but like we went with Amazon solo, Matt, because there are parts of Amazon that are incredibly enticing, right? Because they act as not your customer support from a standpoint of like what John does, but they act as, when Nastasia says distribution, it's not just distribution like from warehouse to warehouse, but like their fulfillment is amazing. Yeah. Their ability to get the stuff out to the customers, to handle returns seamlessly, to make you seem cool on that standpoint is kind of unparalleled, because Amazon is truly, or was until the pandemic, it truly great at customer service, right? The problem is that for as good as they are on the customer side, they can be as bad on our side, because you know, computers will make decisions and you can't get in touch with a human being. Like you have zero meaning to them. Like even if you're doing several millions of dollars of business with them a year, you're still relatively meaningless. But for us, especially, you know, we're a very small manufacturer. And so our margins on our products, even though people think they're expensive, are low, right? Because we're not producing enough product to get really good rates on making stuff. And so in order to sell things at a reasonable price, we can't sell at a Williams-Sonoma. We can't sell at a bunch of places. And because it's just Nastasia and myself, or was until John came on board. No, you know, we had Matt, but I'm saying, you know, Matt was part-time, John's full-time. But, you know, we just don't have the facilities to deal with like 20 different accounts or to sell to mom and pop stores. And so Amazon, because they take a relatively low percentage, like, so that, you know, the cost of doing business on Amazon is what, between 18% and 20%, Nastasia?
Yeah, like 16.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the item and all of that and whether they actually pay you, right? It's very enticing to use them, but then as we've discovered, like one blip can ruin the whole business. And we've been blipped now like three times, aside from the fact that they owe us hundreds of thousands of dollars and never pay us on time. And it's caused us to be late and to like have to take loans and all of this other stuff. Yes, we have to take out loans to
from loan sharks.
Yeah, to subsidize Jeff Bezos. And that is a true freaking story. We, Booker and Dax, have to take out loans to subsidize Amazon. For real, right?
He's strapped for cash, dude.
He is, man. He needs that. He needs that first personal trillion, baby. Everyone's got something to work towards. So listen, but like they can blip you without even caring or knowing. Like the time when a computer we switched a word right before Black Friday. We switched a word in the description and of the Searsall. And literally switching that word caused a computer to say, danger, danger, danger. And they turned off our listing. Like like 3 minutes before we were supposed to have our biggest sale of our lives, right?
Yeah.
That cost us many, many, many thousands of dollars and heartache, because then we had to fulfill all of those things. They had another where their computer just didn't update right. They didn't place an order and Searsalls were out of stock for 3 months. another blip. Again, they don't care. They had, in this latest one, someone complained that they didn't read the instructions, and they complained that they thought it was, quote-unquote, almost unsafe. Not even unsafe. Almost unsafe. which it's not. It's an inert hunk of metal. And so then someone, and literally, it's like, you know how Dick Cheney used to be in an undisclosed location in a bunker, just like chilling in a bunker, shooting his friends in the face, and no one knew where he was? Like, that's how Amazon does all of their, like, teams. So Amazon will hire a team, and it's harder to find an Amazon team than it is to find SEAL Team 6. You know what I'm saying? Like, they are burrowed, like, deep underground, or, like, burrowed deep into something like a tick ready to pop, only you can't find it. They don't have, they have maybe an email that'll get to them. There's no telephones, no names, and they fire everyone every week. So there's no continuity, there's nothing. And so someone on one of these embedded Amazon tick teams, and they don't even tell you what country they're in, right? And, you know, they could be anywhere. That literally, the person could be next door to you, or they could be, you know, in Kazakhstan somewhere. It doesn't matter. Who knows? And they said that we needed to get certified. And here's the funny part. It's like asking for a space pilot's license, right? So someone's like, hey, you flew in space. You need a space pilot's license. We're like, well, there's no rules in space, so we don't have a space pilot's license because a space pilot's license doesn't exist. I can write you one. And they're like, no, it has to be certified by NASA. And you're like, but NASA's not going to certify my space pilot's license because there's no such thing as space pilot's licenses, and NASA's not in the business of certifying things that don't exist. This is fundamentally what they're asking us to do. And so we're still in the throes of this right now, right, Nastasia?
And meanwhile, all the knockoffs are selling, which I believe, I know it sounds like a conspiracy thing, but I believe that those knockoffs are probably being manufactured by Amazon, which would really, like, what would you do, Dave, if that came out that was, what would you do? What would you do?
I mean, that has been their business plan. I know what I would do. Other times.
I know what I would do. I know what I would do.
What would you do?
Nothing. Because I have no power in this situation. This is what it's like to have no power.
No, I think we'd have to take it public and go on the news.
Here's the thing. Someone's like, hey, did you realize that someday you're going to die? What are you going to do about it? Answer, nothing. Right? Yeah, I could wipe creams all over my face and, like, try to only eat antioxidants. I'm still going to die. Right? Like, it's the same thing with Amazon. If Amazon wants to shaft you, they are going to.
I don't know. I think we would need to take it on all the news.
Okay. Crusading. I like crusading Nastasia. That's one of my more favorite Nastasias, but
you and I are good when we're real mad.
Nastasia's only time that Nastasia actually, only reason she still works with me is my ability. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm not. And then she likes to get me to that point where I'm not.
You also, Dave and I switch off on who's going to be angry in this situation.
Or as Nastasia puts it, who's going to be pesky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nastasia, what's been your most successful crusade?
God, I don't know. I'd have to think about that.
All right. We'll tackle that in 2021.
I know what it is, but we can't talk about that on the air.
Okay.
All right. Do some more questions. Steve Young wrote in, hey, had a very successful Thanksgiving where I made 32 takeout dinners my friends picked up from my porch. The main dish was 6-ounce chunks of turkey with chicken thigh skins I had meat glued on and then fried. That's a good call. By the way, also a good call. You can buy boxes of chicken skins and they're pretty beat up. But if you meat glue chicken skin to skirt steak and then fry the skirt steak, that is delicious. Like, that is a chicken fried steak to be reckoned with, for sure. That's one of the things we used to do at the FCI, and I always loved that. You just got to make sure to let it dry out because, you want the skin to be crispy. We also used to fry at a really high temperature. Like, part of the issue, you don't want to overcook the skirt steak too much, so you want to fry at a really high temperature. And if you're going to batter it, which is cool, right, to batter it. We didn't used to batter it, but if you're going to do it battered, so it's like battered chicken skins, because you want it to fry quickly because the skirt steak is thin, I've been researching a lot about battering. And I realized that the fried chicken batter that I have used for the past 25 years or so, which you can get the recipe. Just look up Food and Wine. Look up Dave Arnold Fried Chicken Food and Wine. My recipe is there, at least my recipe as of 20 years ago. Is relatively unusual. I've read in the past week maybe 90 fried chicken recipes, and a low percentage of them use a wet, dry flour breading situation with leavening in the wet. Very rare. And I use two leavenings. I use powder, but I also use soda. And it's because the liquid is buttermilk. Now, if you're using an acidic dip before you're breading, a lot of people maintain the acidity, don't neutralize it with soda. So if you look at like a lot of the dips that are being used in the South, like they'll have hot sauce in them with vinegar, or they'll have some form of acid, even with buttermilk, and they're not neutralizing it with soda like you would for a pancake. And I think after reading a lot of recipes that the reason is because if you leave the batter relatively acidic, it won't brown very quickly. And what that means is if you're going to cook something like a big piece of chicken, like breast meat or something like this, you're going to cook it for a long time. If you cook my recipe for a long time, it gets very dark because it's relatively neutral. If you keep your batter acidic, it will cook relatively, it will take a long time for it to turn brown. So just think about that when you're frying. The smaller the pieces, the faster you want them to get brown. Then make sure you neutralize with soda if you're using something acidic like buttermilk. Long way to go around, but anyway, I would batter it. I would use the recipe that I use for mine because I still like that one, even though I'm doing, but maybe I'll have more information later when I come up with my, you know, fry coating 10 ways situation that I'm working on for the book, but that's my 2 cents there. But that wasn't even your question, Steve. That got me thinking, can I make a good meat glued turducken? Instead of stuffing between the layers, I was thinking of gluing the three meats together, layered in stacks, 6 ounces for each serving with chicken skins glued to the outside. The problem is I'm assuming you can't glue the meats after cooking them. Is that correct? If I have to glue them together before cooking, is there a single ideal temperature to cook them to? What are your thoughts? Steve from LA, AKA Kampachi, fish poet, which we're putting a new newsletter in.
When's that coming out? Dave, did you put your information in? When's that coming out?
I don't know, but listen, that's not the question. The question is, he mutes himself because his dog is barking like a weasel. Listen, Nastasia, has the poem been unseated?
It was unseated last month's newsletter. I don't think it's been unseated, but there was a new poem.
So are we going back to Kampachi or can like...
Yes, we are going back to Kampachi because we didn't get a new submission.
Has Kampachi been unseated? That's how that's the circle been unbroken, but with Kampachi and unseated. Remember that show, Name That Tune, Nastasia?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to love that show. I would be so bad at it.
You know what show Dave and I would be good at? Remember, Dave? It's called...
Any one of those things where you have to know something about the other person, like any one of those like Newlyweds or any one of those other shows, any show where it's required that you know something about the other person.
Yeah, we would if only someone would come up with a show like that again with lots and lots of money. That's how we could bring our business back.
But my like, God, but we wanted to do one that wasn't for people that like not married, like but people that have worked together a long time. We wanted to have a game show that was like coworkers. And like the coworkers, these idiots have been working together for like, you know, 11 years. And so you put them next to each other and see like, you know, see what you get out of it. You know what I mean?
We would win. We would kill. Kill.
So they need a Newlyweds game for coworkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does sound like a promising idea.
Right?
Bring our business back.
Just call us in for the development meetings. Give us a producer title. Pay us $5 and we'll be on our way. That's how
much
we value
ourselves. Want to be on the contestants on the pilot episode.
I don't think you can do both.
I'd rather be a contestant because you know they're not going to pay us.
They're not going to pay you when you're a contestant either.
We're going to win. The winner gets $1 million.
There you go.
You know that they would ask some random question at the end that like, because like we would know all sorts of random things. Like they would be like, how much would it cost for you to eat your own foot? And Nastasi's like, Dave will do it for free. And I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, we get all that stuff right. But then they would ask some question that, like
what
any,
size shoe does Dave wear? I have no idea.
Or like they would any sort of normal question, like, you know, what brand of, you know, what brands of clothing does Nastassia think of? Clothing? What's clothing? What the hell? What? You know what I mean? And then, like, you know, stuff that normal people talk about anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why we would lose, because they would ask all the rando stuff early and we would make it to the end. And then they would ask something that every other human being would know. And I would have no idea. Either
should,
I wouldn't.
We should get to know those simple ones so that we can win this theoretical show.
Yeah. All right. So back to the turducken. So at the FCI, we used to do turducken all the time, and I was kind of happy with it. But here's the problem with low temperature turducken. First of all, the classic turducken is like it's arranged all wrong. It's obviously going to get overcooked. It's clearly problematic. We used to do ballotines, big ballotines, and what we did. We added a fourth meat. We put squab in the middle. And then after the squab, we put duck, right? So basically something that wants to be cooked to roughly 54, 55 degrees Celsius, then something that wants to be cooked to roughly 57 degrees Celsius. And we would like sheet them and then layer them and roll them like a sushi roll, right? And then we put a layer of sausage, because sausage can be considered cooked the you know, it would be okay down to around 60. So there's very little overlap where you're wickedly overcooking the duck, but, you know, not allowing the sausage to get cooked. So we put our sausage layer there / stuffing, right? Then the next layer on the outside was chicken, and then I believe a layer of turkey, and then skin, all meat glued in a layer, rolled into a big ballotine.
Yep.
And then we threw it into a 66 degree bath, right? Which is, you know, a degree higher than really you want the turkey to be, but you're pushing, that's okay actually. You're pushing the temperature through, and this is one of the very few times we used a thermometer. We shoved the thermometer straight down the center of the ballotine, which was all in plastic wrap. It's ballotine actually though, right? Right, John? It's teen, not tan, yeah. Say it for me with the accent. Oh yeah, yeah, how you say meat tube? The thermometer
please,
in.
Please, please go into that. Like, please, in 2021, just do that.
Just randomly, the how you say, how you say, meat tube. Anyway, so like the thermometer all the way through the tube, the meat thermometer through it, and then we pulled it when the squab got up to like 54, and then there was a little bit of a carry, and then you cool it, and then you fry it. Now the It technically was really good. The problem is the pieces were really, really big. Remember, Nastassia?
Yeah.
And so the pieces were a little too big. I would go thinner if you could. And also, it's just like a lot of you. It turns out that people, just like with rib, and if I have a second, I could talk about like the way that I did the rib. I did a four-step low-temperature cooking of my rib roast this year. It's just a lot of perfectly cooked meat, and people don't really actually want a lot of perfectly cooked meat. They want some overcook on the outside, which is why nowadays when I do large party trick things, typically I'll low temp cook
them
all
parties.
The way through. Yes. There are no parties. I thought you were optimistic this year, Stas.
Right now there are no parties. Go on.
So you cook it all the way through, and then you do a roast just for a much shorter period of time to get that nice overcooked stuff on the outside, because everyone actually loves those high temperature overcooked pieces around the edges as long as they're not dry. Would you guys agree with that?
Yes, I have to go.
It's not even the actual minute yet.
All right. I'm just saying. Yeah. Also, Dave, imagine if we were on how much what crazy fight we would get into on that show, that Newlywed show, if we one
co-workers.
Of us got it.
It's called coworkers.
If one of us got it wrong, and well, we got the other, like there would be so much curse. It would be a spectacle.
All right, first of all, like it would need to be like one of those voting off the island situations where they just put us in a padded room afterwards and film the debrief. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Just going on and on. Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There would have to be like so many layers of like soundproofing. Otherwise, like they wouldn't be able to shoot within like a 5-mile radius of us. You know what I mean?
It's Especially if it was the $1 million and you were sure I knew it or I was sure you knew it. Oh, my God.
They would have to take all weapons away from you because I'm fine with the number of buttholes I have right now. I don't need another butthole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we didn't hear this. Before Nastasya's about to bow out, I'm going to try to hit two or three more questions if it's okay with Matt after she bows out.
Yeah.
What do you have on Christmas, Stas?
You're asking me?
I am.
My dad cooked a ribeye.
How was it?
It was good. It was really good. Super good. I'm on the new grill I got him.
Wait, cooked it outside?
Yeah.
Huh. And how long did it take on the grill?
I did not pay attention.
Were you getting agita over running out of propane?
No. No. It was a new tank. Sell it at the gas stations here. They don't sell it at the Home Depots. Because Home Depot is hoarding.
Whenever I go to back when I was allowed to go to my parents' house, like it's always like, do you have enough propane to do what you're doing? And then because they were always also worried about it, they would turn the grill on too late and then turn it off too quickly. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you want that sucker like my mom's like, but how hot do you want it? Like on medium? I'm like, Ma, as high as it'll go. They're like, but I'm like, Ma, as high as it will go. You know what I mean? And then like I want it to go, but then you need infinite propane all the time. I don't know. They have city gas. I don't know why they don't just plumb it. Anyway, does your dad have city gas?
I don't know, but I didn't even know that was an option. And this is his first propane grill. So he was like, wait, what? So I don't know.
So did he not trust it? Did he still have a sack of charcoal next to it?
Yeah, no.
I love that. I love that. It's like, oh, it's a nice gift, honey, but I'm going to keep my sack of charcoal here just in case.
Yeah, my mom is keeping the charcoal grill for no good reason.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do. You know what I mean? That's especially like they live in a house. They can afford to, right? It's not like they're in an apartment. Yeah. All right. And I guess on a grill, did he do it in a pan on the grill so he was able to catch the drippings? And was there a water pan underneath so that it didn't scorch the drippings and cause a fire?
Not there is a built-in pan underneath, but it was cooked in a pan, on the grill.
And it tasted good and there was no fire? That's good.
Yes.
What sides did you have?
Mashed potatoes and Brussels sprouts.
Okay, so Wiley, I was with we'd quarantined beforehand, gotten all tested, and then got, Jen's sisters and my family's. We were all in one building, which was nice.
What test was it? Was it the... the accurate one or the non-accurate one?
Well, I've had COVID, so I allowed myself to just have the rapid. Jen got the PCR, and she also came back negative, and Jen and I haven't been seeing anyone. And then we made Dax take it twice. We had him do the rapid twice. Once, then waited 2 days, took it again, and then went, because he's the only one in the family that has never tested positive for COVID. Yeah, who knows? So anyways, so we're together, and Wiley made this delicious thing, which I had never had before. And maybe it's just because I'm a moron that I haven't had before, but see whether you guys have had it. So Wiley was making gnocchi, but not like Italian gnocchi. He was, not what I classically think of, not potato gnocchi. He just made a choux pastry. So for those of you that don't, choux spelled like the French word for cabbage, right, is normally what you make those little puffs out of, or like gougères. They're real eggy, and you make like a hot, you put hot water in to make the dough, like boiling water in to make the dough. Then you add the eggs and they puff up. It's a choux pastry. It's a thing. Was that an accurate description of it, you think, John? I think it's accurate. I didn't look up the recipe, but I haven't made it in years. But he made a choux pastry, put it into a piping bag, and this is a Wiley thing. He says he got it from somewhere, but it was pretty cool. He bought a monofilament and tied the monofilament across his boiling pot in a line, right? And then just stood there with the pastry bag and went with the fishing line. It was like, boop, 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 boop. So he didn't have to have a knife or anything. He didn't have to one-hand it and then with a knife go chack-a-da, chack-a-da, chack-a-da. Yeah, smart. And so he's there going with the choux pastry into the thing. And when the choux pastry boils, it still gets that hollow kind of choux pastry center. It's still real light and choux pastry-like. Then he like pulled it out and then sauteed them in a pan to get kind of a little bit of a buttery crispness on the outside, like you would get in a choux pastry. And I have to say, they were freaking delicious. Have any of you had anything like this before?
I don't think so.
Sounds good though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Wiley knows his weird uses of old school French stuff.
Also, Dave, on your Instagram post with Wiley, who infiltrated it and made you feel awful?
Claire.
Claire infiltrated what?
Claire gets on, likes the thing. I'm like, oh, nice. Okay, great. And then she goes through this story where she cooked a filet mignon. Don't get me started. And then she says that she asked Nastasia how to do it, and you had given her some advice. And then she says, well, I didn't follow any of that advice. Gives me the indication that she's horribly mutilated it, but without any sort of real data. And then asked me, and I was like, I don't know what do you want me to do with this information? I have no idea what the heck you want me to do with this information. Like, how did it taste? And then it gets worse from there. She starts saying how she like sliced it thin and fried it in pans and like cooked it forever and threw it into a warming oven and just like, you know,
anything you could do with meat, she did. Like any way you could cook meat, she did it to this poor filet mignon.
Yeah,
oven to pan to microwave to
dehydrator. Yeah, like any horrible thing that you could do. Because basically, everybody, filet mignon has no texture. So as soon as you cook it, you've ruined it, right? This is why you just want it to be like nice and seared on the outside and basically, you know, blue, warm on the inside. Would you guys agree with this?
Agree.
Yeah, because it's got no, if you cook it at all too high, it goes fibery. This is why I don't really like a lot of low temp on filet unless it's just barely up. And then I still, anytime you cook it longer than 45 minutes, you've really kind of hosed it, an hour max, right? Because it starts getting fibery. Anyway, so she says this long sort of thing and I'm just like, aah! And so I just wrote, you're making my palms sweaty and giving me agita, and signed off. And then like Cooking Issues crew just started hammering her, calling her low quality. And she threw Nastasia under the bus, basically saying that Nastasia was her quote-unquote meat coach, right? And then, thereby making kind of what happened Nastasia's fault, and people were like, yo, if someone tells you to do something, and then you don't do it, you can't even call them out at all. Nastasia's name should not have even been mentioned in this Coralio. You know what I mean?
That's true. No, I told her to cook it less time, lower temperature, because I knew she would double that. So, and she did.
And she even more than double it. She's like, can I also deep fry it? Can I also like put it into a solar oven? Can I put it at the focal point of a military radar set so that I like microwave it with 8 billion watts? Like, you know, like, which is how the microwave was invented, by the way, by the good folks at Raytheon.
I had Claire pegged as more of like a vegan juice cleanse kind of person.
When she's in Mexico.
No, she's in South Carolina right now.
I really wish that she was still on her regular juice cleanse, which is Chardonnay.
Me too. I liked old Chardonnay, Claire.
I mean, that's a juice cleanse.
Kendall Jackson Chardonnay. Yeah.
I only have Kendall Jackson juice on my juice cleanse. Yeah, that's the classic. That's the Claire kids go for. You met her as a camp counselor, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And you guys
and she was always on Chardonnay as a camp counselor.
Nice. Well, yeah, I'm sure you got, yeah. It wasn't like heavily oaked California stuff though, right? Were you steel tank people back in the day? What were you doing?
Oh, I don't remember what it was. Whatever crap, like Swiss crap table Chardonnay, you know, equivalent is.
Yeah. Never been to Switzerland, flown over it several times. Looks cool.
You could go on vacation. Okay, I'm signing off.
All right, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, we'll talk to everybody next week,
What day of the month is it next?
I think
week?
It's just a Tuesday. Random
yeah.
whatever.
Fifth, yeah, I'll be good.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
All right. I'm gonna Matt, you okay if I answer a couple more questions real quick?
Yeah, like two more.
All right. From Kyle Youngblood via email. I've done and this is perfect because it's a carbonation question. And as you guys know, if you ask a carbonation question when Nastasia is on, it's problems. I've done carbonation before with metal carbonation cap and 2 liter caps and 2 liter bottles. But I found a carbonation stone, which I've never heard of before, and I can't remember if you've gone over it now. The carbonation stone has 0.5 micron holes, and they say it produces a very fine bubbles. Would these stones produce carbonated water with smaller bubbles than you can with the carbonating cap, or would the water be exactly the same? It would be exactly the same. Like, the fine bubbles is just to increase the surface area and the number of bubbles that are diffusing into the liquid. Once the liquid is done, it has no memory of how it was carbonated. The only thing it remembers is how much gas is in there and if there are other dissolved gases. So good carbonation is going to be when you get rid of other dissolved gases and when you get enough stuff in. I find it difficult to get a good carbonation with those stones. There are machines that will... like circulate over one of those stones and get decent carbonation in water, not in cocktails. But again, I'm never a huge fan, because then also eventually you need to clean them and whatnot. Bubble size for a specific liquid is dependent on what's in it, the products that are in it. So like, for instance, in wines, like the autolyzed yeast and things like that can affect bubble size. Sugar affects bubble size. Salt affects bubble size. Ions, like minerals, affect bubble size. Alcohol content obviously affects bubble size and bubble mouthfeel. In water, in specifically in unsugared, in mineral waters, the two main things that are going to determine, three main things are other dissolved gases. So other dissolved gases, when you uncrack them, will produce lots of small bubbles. That's the nitrogen kind of trick, right? But will produce way lower overall carbonation. And salts, dissolved minerals will produce a smaller perceived bubble in my experience. I haven't looked it up scientifically, but in my experience, will produce a smaller perceived bubble size for a given level of CO2. So less CO2 means less carbonation and smaller bubbles, higher salts, smaller bubbles, and I think less perceived carbonation and other dissolved gases in it, when you uncrack them, will cause that, because they will pop out of solution like that. Hello, Nastasia and Cooking Issues. Nastasia might have waited on this. Greetings from Scotland. I have a question about pigs in blankets. I should preface this by saying that this relates to the United Kingdom version of pigs in a blanket, which is bacon wrapped around thin or very small pork sausages, such as chipolatas or cocktail sausages, and then usually cooked in an oven. The Wikipedia suggests that a U.S. version is quite different. Hot dogs. And also there's the variant pigs in a blanket can be, if you used to go to IHOP back in the day, is a pancake wrapped around a sausage. So I still think of IHOP when I think of pigs in a blanket. Matt, you're a vegetarian, but you didn't used to be. And John, you've spent time both in Europe and the U.S. What are your pigs in a blanket? What do you think?
Wrapped in puff pastry.
Okay, so that's your pig in a blanket. Yeah. So like the cocktail party classic, small sausage wrapped in puff pastry. Do you are you guys thinking it's a square that's wrapped over, so it looks like it's been wrapped in a napkin, or like the round all the way around where it looks like it's actually in a blanket?
I guess round all the way around. Yeah.
Yeah, although I think you see more often the one where it's a square folded corner to corner like a napkin around a whatever. So, the Wikipedia suggests the U.S. version is quite different. Hot dogs wrapped in croissant pastry sounds good, but not relevant to this question. With that reference in mind, a friend of mine commented this week, pigs in a blanket, i.e. bacon wrapped around sausage, are wasteful, overrated, and disgusting. Wrapping bacon around a sausage means neither component cooks correctly. I agree with this. I like sausage and I like bacon, but I don't like pigs in a blanket. This may partly be down to the fact that when I've eaten them, they've been pre-made supermarket snacks produced with low-quality ingredients. That said, it does seem inevitable that bacon on the outside would be overdone and hard by the time the sausage is cooked through. I think it's actually kind of the opposite problem. I would think that you wouldn't crisp up the bacon sufficiently for most people without overcooking the sausage. What do you guys think?
I agree. I think it's like bacon wrapped scallops. Great idea, but it never gets executed properly because the bacon never cooks. If you cook the bacon properly, then the scallops are hammered.
Do you know what's good if you like water chestnuts? Those bacon wrapped water chestnuts. You ever had those?
I have not.
Yeah, good. Very 70s. The problem with you guys is you weren't alive in the 70s. when that was a thing. Canned water, chestnuts, bacon, and I think a third component. I forget what they were called, but there was a toothpick through them, and you would eat them. That's what you used to do. So, like, they would come, like, in a chafing dish with the toothpick, water, chestnut, bacon, some third component I'm forgetting, and then you would eat them. That's what you would do with them. I think your problem is that they're not meant to be high quality in the sense of high quality. The best version of this I used to have was at a like a lunch counter called the Yankee Doodle, which was in, it went out of business maybe 3 years or 4 years ago, but it was a staple for like 80 years in New Haven. And their version of pig in a blanket was, and this is the way it should be done, I think, was a standard U.S. hot dog, right? Wrapped with a thin standard garbage lunch counter bacon. And the reason this is important is because the thin bacon is going to cook relatively quickly, right? And there is no opportunity for it to be dry because there is no center meat. It is simply the like crust of a bacon, and the fat keeps it lubricated because there's no sort of like large amount of meat to get dry. Is this making sense, especially to the meat eaters here, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then it was cooked on, rolled on a griddle or perhaps fried, I can't remember, right? Until it was just done, and the hot dog, you know, was fine, and the bacon was perfect because it was very thin. It was then put on, and talking about gilding the lily in the best of ways, a split buttered toasted hot dog bun. And it was good. Do you know what I mean? Now, was it all like, was it the best expression of bacon? Absolutely not. What is it, the best expression of sausage? Clearly not, right? I mean, it's pretty dang good as a hot dog bun goes. But it's like, it was a decent combination of low quality lunch counter bacon and low quality American hot dogs. Does that make sense? And it was enjoyable to eat. All right. I still haven't gotten through even a chunk of these questions yet, John. I feel like we're going to have to next week go over even more of these questions, right?
Yeah, we got to stop going off on tangents and just focus.
No tangents? No Amazon talk?
No. Let's get these done. Yeah, there's a lot.
John, let me ask you a question because I don't remember. Were there any things where someone had a question that they specifically needed to answer for New Year's?
No.
So we'll give you a couple seconds to make sure that no one has any New Year's questions that they need.
No, one did come in right before the show. But that is not, nope, I think we're good.
All right, people, Happy New Year, and we'll see you next year on Cooking Issues.
Cooking Issues is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.